is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Roosevelt Sweeps Nation, the new book from David Petrucha, FDR's 1936 Landslide and the Triumph of the Liberal Ideal. From the point of view of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, there are figures on his left, there are figures on his right, there are figures who represent the Communist Party, there are figures who represent outright celebration of the dictators in Europe at this time, Mussolini and Hitler. But there is one figure that represents all of the above or none of the above, depending on the day of the week. William Randolph Hearst, born 1863. He is 72 years old, 73 years old at this point. And yet he can pick up the phone and reach anybody in America, including the President of the United States. David, it is a complication to summarize Hearst with Roosevelt in particular. He was for him before he was against him, before he was for him, before he was against him. Let's keep ourselves right now to 32 to 36. What was Hearst's opinion of Roosevelt in the campaign of 32 facing Herbert Hoover?
Didn't like him. Didn't like Hoover. Didn't like Al Smith. Didn't like anyone except John Nance Gardner. And the Roosevelt has a problem in 1932. And that has a bunch of problems, but the two-thirds rule. So he can get to the convention and have, the majority of the delegates, but he can't get the nomination until that logjam is broken and he gets two-thirds of the delegates. But Hearst, who had supported Garner, is controlling California and Texas delegations. And even when FDR switches on the League of Nations to curry favor with Hearst, Hearst still doesn't like him. But Joe Kennedy goes to Hearst, as some other people go to Hearst, and say, if you don't take Roosevelt, you're going to get somebody you like even less. And Hearst caves in and gets, pretty good bargain. He gets to name the president and the vice president of the United States, but the deal doesn't take. And as Roosevelt moves more to the left during the New Deal, and particularly with the National Recovery Act and talking about raising taxes on the wealthy, like William Randolph Hearst, Hearst becomes more and more disaffected. And Roosevelt has to make nice with him. And it's a very long, bumpy, involved breakup, but the breakup will come.
In 1935, William Randolph Hearst personally owns 28 newspapers, 8 radio stations, and David reports $100 million a year, which is more than every other nation except for 4 or 5 in the planet, in the solar system. This is all his power. And all politicians are aware of his positions because he writes. Does he write in capital letters on the front page, David? Or
quite often it's in all caps and exclamation points and the little boxes on the front page, even when he's not influencing the repertorial policy, those editorials go on that front page. And actually, they're pretty well written.
Hearst is so powerful that in 1934, he is invited by one of Hitler's go-betweens, Hanfstaengl, to visit Berlin and to visit with the dictator. Hearst and his colleagues and Marion Davies, his beloved. You all know Hearst from the Orson Welles movie. However, this is the genuine historical figure. We shouldn't confuse them. And Hearst was not shy about his relationship with Marion Davies. Hearst was many years older, and at the time it was tist-tist in polite circles, but it was acceptable in political circles, and especially in Europe. And Marion Davies very much wanted to meet the dictator. She was disappointed and, in fact, tricked by Hearst and his colleagues. And Hearst had a meeting with Hitler in his office at the Reichschancellery by himself. Again, David, this is one of those scenes, it's hard to imagine it's real. Do we know any amount about how long the meeting took? You have some ideas about, but the sources here are incomplete.
they're at variance with each other, where supposedly Hearst had told Marion that it was like 5 minutes or 10 minutes. And with all translations, you'd barely be able to say Gesundheit. There's a fellow who accompanies Hearst to the meeting, and he says it goes on for much longer. Hearst has some letters back and forth with his editorial staff. And they're all giving different versions of this. But it appears that Hearst kind of starts off with some flattery, because flattery will get you somewhere. But eventually does raise some sensitive issues, like the persecution of the Jews. And he had talked to Louis B. Mayer, a close friend of his, beforehand, as to whether this meeting would be a good idea and whether he should raise those issues. But when you're William Randolph Hearst, and you're not too popular in a lot of circles anyway, shall we say the visuals, even though there aren't literal visuals of this meeting, are not good for Hearst. And it really accelerates his decline in popularity and circulation of newspapers and advertising revenue.
As we approach the campaign of 36, the campaign season of 36, the President Roosevelt is aware that he needs to make peace or in some fashion neutralize Hearst, who can swing all these newspapers against him. And there's a meeting at the White House with a go-between named Koblenz. And I'm struck by what the president's thinking in the quotes that you provide, David. What worries the president at this time is what he calls crackpot ideas, Longism, Coghlanism, Townsendism. We've talked about those three. Although Huey Long is dead, that popular spirit is out there, and Talmadge can use it. Others can use it against the president. He doesn't say Hearst bothers him. Is Hearst looking to switch to the president at this time? Is the president hoping that Hearst will go his way in the campaign, this late in the campaign?
Well, Koblenz, being a Hearst man, he's not about to complain to Hearst. Koblenz about Hearst, and that will get back to him and just inflame the situation more. But this is at the time when Roosevelt is, as I said before, he would often react to these measures, outside pressures. And at this point, that's when Huey Long, this is in response to Long's Soak the Rich program, and Roosevelt has his own Soak the Rich program at this point, tax program, which is really going to inflame Hearst. And Roosevelt is talking about how he has to combat all these things, including communism, and he says and he gets stuck. He's not quite sure what to say, and Ed Koblenz says, neo-communism? And Roosevelt, again, just sort of laughs, but doesn't really have an answer for that. And the conversation does get back to Hearst, right, as it was intended to. And the break is going to come.
Yes, the quote that I like from that you picked up on, David, whereas the president allows in this conversation with Koblenz, it may be necessary to throw 46 men who make $1 million a year to the wolves. That would be Hearst and his gang. And his colleagues, the wealthiest men in America. And Hearst then, is this when Hearst gives the order to reduce his income to under $1 million? Was it before?
Yeah, because he says, I cannot afford to pay this amount of taxes. I cannot afford to have this amount of actual income. I want the corporation to pick up the slack at, say, San Simeon and all his other housekeeping situations. And there are several housekeeping situations.
All right. So Hearst now is not decided, but he's not for the opponent yet. We've got to choose the opponent. And when we come back, the Republican nominees from 1936. The book is Roosevelt Sweeps Nation, FDR's 1936 Landslide and the Triumph of the Liberal Ideal. David Petrucha is the author. I'm John Batchelor.